Next hour, we'll take your phone calls. This hour, we'll continue to chat with Richard Hammond about his work at the Unknown Universe. And he's up next on Coast to Coast AM. You keep looking at the propulsion systems, Richard, that we're using to get objects into space and the shuttle. When will we learn how to bend space and time together for instantaneous travel?
Well, instantaneous travel is going to be a hard one, but there might be a better route than trying to look at new propulsion. And that's the concept of a wormhole. And if you have a black hole, which I can talk about more in a minute, but if you have a black hole, then associated with that is what Einstein discovered many years ago was a wormhole that connects to a different region, or either a different region in space, like another, it could be another galaxy, or it could even be another universe. The problem is that we don't know. But by traveling through this wormhole, you could get to a very, very, very distant space in a relatively short time. So it's not so much the propulsion system you want to work on. It would be finding or making a wormhole that you could travel through.
Did you see the movie Contact?
Yes, I did.
Jodie. Okay, yes. Was that? She was traveling through wormholes, wasn't
she? That's right. That's right. Exactly. Now, the trouble is that, as I said before, you need a black hole. Now, in that movie, they somehow created the wormhole with that big contraption.
With the machine, exactly. Yeah.
And that we just don't know how to do that at this point. The only way we know to make a wormhole is to find a black hole and jump in.
Well, I like the way, though, that you say at this point, almost as if there is that possibility out there.
Right. Well, you know, it's in our capability to curve space, to bend space. The main trouble is we can't curve it very much. We can't bend it very much because it just takes an enormous amount of matter. But with all these other unknowns that we have going in the universe, I doubt the theory we have right now is complete and correct. I think there's a lot that's going to be changed over the years, and I think these theories will evolve, and there's plenty of room for many strange things to happen, including the possibility of wormholes.
What created the possibility that began to let some physicists theorize that there might be more than one universe out there? What happened?
Actually, I think that might go back to philosophical issues and the concept of an infinite universe. And if you have an infinite universe and you could have an infinite amount of repetition, then there's always, the chances are that you're always going to find another Earth and another Sun. And I think that, of course, that's all one universe. But I think those ideas led to the philosophical idea of other universes. In more modern times, physicists like to view it as it comes from our views of what we call statistical mechanics. If we want to understand the probability of how things happen to relate to the pressure of the air and how heat flows, we view what we call this grand canonical ensemble, fancy sounding words, but what we envision is we pretend there's many, 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 many systems, and we look at the average of how they all behave. And by looking at that average, we are able to predict how our system behaves. Well, I think that concept, if you generalize it to our universe, and you want to understand how our seemingly many random things that happen, to understand how the randomness happens, you look at many, many, many universes, and you take a kind of average of those. And I think that's how it began. But then people began looking at the idea, well, maybe it's just not an idea of statistical probability. Maybe they're real. Maybe there are other universes. And then, of course, with the concept of string theory, where there's more dimensions, then it gets even more complicated, where other universes could exist in these different dimensions. So it really gets wild, and it begins to boggle the imagination. But I think that those are the things that kind of got us thinking about the possibility of other universes.
Are we developing telescopes now, Richard, because this is going to lead into the question of other universes again, where we can see the outreaching, if that exists, of the universe? Can we see almost the very farthest star out there?
Yeah, well, we can see the Hubble telescope allows us to see back in time to when the universe was only a billion years old. But
And what's the reason why I can't go farther? It's just not built big enough for that?
No, unfortunately, it's worse than that. It's not that you don't have a big enough telescope. It's that since the universe is expanding, we're getting further and further away, and there's what we call a horizon. And beyond that horizon, we can never see. We can never see back to the beginning just because we're expanding too fast, and the light will never, ever, the light from the original Big Bang will never reach us.
It's so, moving away faster than we can get to it.
Yeah.
Basically.
Basically, that's it. So we call, you know, this is just the horizon, the visible, we call it the horizon of the visible universe. So we can only go back so far. Now we're almost at that point with, as I say, seeing back to when the universe was only a billion years old. But it's amazing. When you look at those pictures, it's called the Hubble Deep View. I mean, to see those early galaxies, you could go on Google it and you could see NASA pictures. It's just amazing to look at these things. And you're looking at the universe when 13 billion years ago, when it was only a billion years old. And there they are, all these galaxies, and who knows what else was there.
Oh, absolutely. Do you think those galaxies are now gone?
Yes. Well, there's certainly...
I guess based on the science, we think we understand they're gone.
Yeah, what happens is galaxies collide with each other, and new galaxies are formed, and stars burn out. The early stars might have been very big, and the bigger they are, it turns out, the more quickly they use up their fuel, and they undergo these supernovas. So a lot of those galaxies are probably gone, blown up, or distorted, or combined with other galaxies, or maybe even got swallowed up by a black hole along the line somewhere.
Assuming mankind is still alive on this planet, when the time comes, let's say, for the sun to extinguish or something else happen, mm-hmm. what do you think those last days would be like for humans who are on the planet, Richard?
That's another tough one. I think there's two kinds of extinctions. There's the one that's going to be quick, like a giant asteroid hits us or something, and then it just, you know, we're gone in no time.
Man.
But the other kind, like where the sun begins to change and it starts to get hotter, and, you know, it might take years before life gets extinguished, and I think that's going to be very nasty. I think we're going to see civilization as worse, where people are going to fight for the best land, which might be at the polar caps because they may be the coolest as the sun gets very hot. I think it's going to be very ugly, and I think laws are going to be broken. And
Richard, you sound like you're defining now.
Oops, the phone just fell. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good. I think it's going to be worse.
Made you laugh that much?
Yeah. That's a shame to see the state we're in now with all the wars and the terrible atrocities going on. So, you know, that's a good point. And But I think it'll just get worse at that time.
I don't think I'd want to be around then, would you?
No. I always thought if we get hit by a big asteroid, you may as well be right there, enjoy the flash, and then go out fast, then, you know, and struggle through the last months or weeks of a bleak and terrible existence.
Do you think this planet could get hit by an asteroid? Let's say we you know, go to bed after this program. We wake up in the morning and all over the place it's splattered that we've been hit by an asteroid, that some small country's been taken out, or it landed in the ocean and some coastal lines have been wiped out. Could something like that happen? And we truly not see an object that big that could create that kind of a disaster?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's not that big. I mean, the impact 60 million years ago that hit the Yucatan Peninsula and wiped out 80% of all life, that was only that was an asteroid. That was only 5 miles across. And, you know, 5 miles is not big. It may sound big here on Earth, but once you get millions of miles out into space, it's a speck. And these things are traveling maybe at 20 miles per second. This is an enormous speed, 20 miles per second. So it could, and if it's coming from, these things might loop around the sun. And if it's, so if it's coming at us from the sun, we'd never
we'll,
see it.
We'll never see it.
Yeah, so it could happen. And or we might see it, you know, the last, you know, a few hours before. And, you know, there's not a real official program that looks for these impacts. I think that's a disgrace, by the way. Luckily, we do have an army of volunteers, so to speak, the people who discover comets and asteroids and so
sure.
forth. But there's very, very little official or government money spent on looking for these things.
Yeah, we've got a limited budget with, what, the Near-Earth Tracking Group, mm-hmm. and that's about it.
Yeah, that's about it.
So it could possibly happen. Would you wake up one morning and something's wiped out?
It's possible. It's possible the whole enchilada could get wiped out. But these events are rare. So, you know, that big one was as I said, about 60 million years ago. And then in 1908 in Russia, there was a comet that blew up. We think it was a comet that blew up over Tunguska. And that was like a, you know, a 20-megaton atomic bomb, the amount of power it had. But luckily, that was in a remote part of the world, so there wasn't much life lost. But so these things do happen, and of course we get peppered all the time with small ones that burn up in the atmosphere. But yes, it's, George, it's possible. It could happen any time, and the only thing we have going, well, most people say it's not if, it's when. But the good thing is it is rare. So the chances are low that's going to happen, but sooner or later it will.
And we don't have a warning system in place for this,
no,
really, do we?
We could try to study more on how to divert them. I mean, if you can find them early enough, you could probably divert them. That would take, you know, a response team of sending something out there and somehow exerting some sort of force to push it off course. But if you get it early enough, You can do it. If you wait till it's, you know, near the moon or something coming at it, it's too late to change its course.
Back to the multiverses for a second, Richard. If we did have the equipment that would let us look beyond that horizon, as you talk about, if we could see all the way back, could we possibly see the multiverses attached to us, or would we not see them like they call dark matter?
In my view, I would say we would not see them by definition of what another universe is. Now, this, I can't be sure about this, but the light in our universe stays in our universe. So, and the light in a different universe is going to stay in that universe. So the way I'm thinking of multiverse,
why the barrier?
Well, because if there were no barrier, then it would really be the same universe.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but so you'd have to look for more indirect ways of interaction. And now,
maybe like bubbles stuck together?
Yeah, exactly. That's how I envision it. So there might be these regions of contact, of overlap, like you see in the science fiction movies, but that could be, and where the two bubbles stick together, and that's where the interesting physics could be. That's where you could have some very exotic phenomena going on.
How would you like to be the entity that could look back at all the bubbles connected and still be so vast that you would have that big picture?
If you could just get a glimpse of nature like that, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? Just to see so much. You know, we struggle all the time just to understand a little bit, another centimeter, another inch of knowledge, so to speak. And there you are with the grand picture all laid out for you. What a thrill that would be.
A lot of talk lately about string theory. What's your thoughts on that?
String theory is a wonderful thing, I think, in many ways. Almost everything it predicts is wrong, yet it survives. It predicts that we live in 10 dimensions. Now, when I say is wrong, I'm being a little bit hard on it. I mean, so we don't see 10 dimensions. We see 3 dimensions plus time. So maybe string theory is telling us there's these extra dimensions, we just don't see them. But for the moment, just let me say, compared to what we know, string theory tells us we live in 10 dimensions. That seems to be wrong. String theory tells us there's particles we don't see, particles like the neutralino and the photino, unsated particles. These are called superpartners. So there's all these particles we've never observed. So it's telling us a lot of things that are wrong, it seems, but it's, again, it's possible. We just haven't observed them yet. But let me tell you the most beautiful thing of all about string theory. As it stands now, when we look at particles, we think of them as points. And you have an electron, you have quark, you have an up quark, a down quark, you have this and you have that, and you have all these different particles, and they're very different. And physics likes to unify things and look at things in a more simplistic view. Now, with a string, all you have is one particle. It's a string. It's not a particle. It's a string. And all the different, quote-unquote, particles we see are just different vibrations on the string. So if you think of a string vibrating in one mode, that's an electron. Now it vibrates in a different mode, that's a proton, and so on. So it really gives a great simplicity. And all we have to do is understand these different vibrations of the string, so to speak, and we have this beautiful picture of a very simplistic and, to physics, I think, a very beautiful picture of nature. So I think it's a fascinating theory. I do not think, as it stands, it's a correct description of the world, but I think there's something to it. I just think it needs a lot more work.
One of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes, Richard, where parents woke up and they could hear their child, you know, basically saying, "Where are you? Where are you?"
Uh-huh.
And she fell out of bed, and next to her bed was a portal into another dimension.
That's right.
And these dimensions that we have been talking about, that there could be numerous, would it be like that? Is that possible, that there are portals on this planet into other dimensions and we just don't even know about it?
It is possible, but probably not that size. By the way, I remember the episode very well, and the man and the woman, she's probably crying and they're upset, and she says, "Call so-and-so, he's a physicist, he'll know what to do."
Yeah, exactly.
And then he comes over, and the dog helps save the kid, by the way.
And they send the father to him, remember?
Yeah. So that's the cool thing about extra dimensions. They may kind of bend around, and there may be portals like that. Now, since we've never seen portals like that except that episode, we don't really think they're that big, but they may be on a smaller scale. And like maybe the atomic scale, or maybe even a little bit bigger than the atomic scale, maybe molecular, maybe even possibly on the millimeter scale. And if that's true, that's exactly back to your CERN problem, where those accelerator experiments, that's where we can get into trouble. If there's this overlap of dimensions around the scale of a millimeter or so, that's where it's possible things can go wrong and we can get these very disastrous effects. But so to answer your question, I would say probably not on the scale of a person could just walk through, but it might be true on a very small scale or on a very, very, very big scale, like the size of a galaxy or something.
Which we just haven't stumbled into yet.
Yeah. Or maybe we have and we don't know it. Maybe this is somehow related to dark matter and dark energy. Maybe it's a gravitational effect of another dimension.
If Einstein were alive today, Richard, we have the computer, we've got this semblance of new knowledge. How far advanced would he be at this point? I mean, would he be changing his theories?
It's just a wonderful idea to think of such a great mind as his now. I think we need him now. What Einstein had, more than very many people, was the ability to look at a problem, not because of an unanswered question, but because of the basic beauty and physics of the universe. He based his theories on basic ideas. That's what we need today, someone to give us more physics in the theory, more fundamental physics.
Richard, let's talk about the Big Bang when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Yes, soggy Earth right now. That's all it's been doing is raining in St. Louis. Have you picked up the After Dark newsletter yet? Well, go ahead by calling 1-888-727-5505. You can also go on our website, coasttocoastam.com, safe and secure, and also just click the link straight to After Dark. This one we'll spend some time on, Richard. A long time ago in a far off, I don't know, vastness, there was a Big Bang. What blew up?
Yeah, what indeed? You know, by the 1930s or so, people realized the universe was expanding. There was no question about that. There was a lot of evidence for it. And people wondered how that could be. And it was hard to understand what was going on. And there were two schools of thought. One was the stationary state theory that said the universe always was this way. This was the way people believed even before the expansion theory, that the universe always was. And now that it's expanding, well, that's okay. It was always expanding. It always was. And in some ways, that might be easier to understand. The other school of thought said, nope, if it's expanding now, it must have been smaller. And if it was smaller then, it must have come from a point, the Big Bang. And there was astronomers on both sides and physicists on both sides. And the proponents of the steady state theory tried to make fun of the Big Bang theory, and that's what they call it. They said, what, did it start from some Big Bang? And they were trying to be pejorative with that phrase, but it stuck, and now it's exactly what we call it, the Big Bang. And I would say in all of physics, maybe in all of everything.
Everything.
The hardest thing to understand is the Big Bang. Because the Big Bang created space and it created time. That's what's so hard to understand. Before the Big Bang,
there was nothing.
No space. There was no time.
There was just nothing, right?
Yeah, and it's not even correct to think of a big, empty black empty space, and somewhere there was an explosion. That's wrong because there was no big black space.
Well, and if there was a black empty space, that itself is something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly right. So somehow or another, there's absolutely nothing, which we can't, our brains, at least my brain, can't get my hands around.
No.
Okay, and then space and time began at some point 14 billion years ago. And you can't help asking yourself the question, well, what came before the Big Bang? But you can't ask that because there was no time and no space before the Big Bang. But what caused it? What made our universe come into being? It's just mind-boggling. There is no answer to that.
A long time ago, Richard, my mother who teaches and has taught me so much about science and UFOs and things like that, just an incredible person. But she said something I'll never forget, which is almost exactly what you've just said right now, except I'm going to add the equation. She was talking to me about God. She's very spiritual. And she said, George, I just want you to know this. I must have been 6 or 7 years old. She said, God always was and always will be, which is almost the theory of the universe.
Mm-hmm. The steady state theory. It always was and always will be. And that's you know, one of the theories. The other one, and that I think we can understand.
Well, do you have to add the God equation to understand that? Does that have to exist as well?
I don't think so. Maybe, though. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think it helps understanding that kind of thing. But this Big Bang, you know, it's possible that the universe at some future state will start to collapse again. Right now, we don't see that happening because of this expansion we talked about earlier, but possible that can change, and some in the distant future the universe will collapse. And if it does collapse, then it will collapse down to a point and be gone.
Now, the Big Bang theory, though, also starts with a compaction of matter, right? Mm-hmm. That it came in smaller than a pinhole.
That's right.
And then blew up. Mm-hmm. I have a difficult time understanding that too.
Now, who doesn't, right? But now there's people considering alternatives, and the idea that there was not exactly a Big Bang, but there was a collapsing universe, and it got smaller and smaller and smaller, and then it hit some small minimum size, maybe the size of a baseball, maybe the size of a grain of sand, and something happened, some physics we don't understand happened, and it just all of a sudden blew apart. And what we think of as a Big Bang, the beginning of it all, is not the beginning of it all at all. It's just that turning point. and the universe might cycle through these things. The problem is it's more speculation than physics, because we don't know what happens at that turning point, what creates it. However, I think where this came into popularity was with the idea of 10 dimensions. So when we think of this Big Bang, and we think of this very, very small region, in 10 dimensions, it might be like take a balloon and squeeze it, put your hand around it and squeeze it, and you have this one part that's really squeezed, really small, but then it expands out in other parts.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe what we have is this 10-dimensional thing that one part is being squeezed to a point, or almost a point, and that's just the 3 dimensions that we see, while the other ones are really expanding out. And now what we see is expanding out. The other dimensions are really, really small, and that's why we don't see them. So this is a fascinating idea, that in 10 dimensions, it's just a big wiggly thing that's oscillating back and forth, and this might go on and on again and again. Now, as I say, this is kind of more speculation than physics, but it's a very fascinating idea, and it kind of helps us avoid the incredibly hard notion of a Big Bang as we generally speak about it.
Of course, even then, if you squeeze this balloon too tight, it could blow up.
It could also pinch off. Then you're back to your 2 universes, or maybe a bunch of universes. So
there's something else, Richard, I think, that physics hasn't found, that metaphysicians haven't found, that we haven't found. There's something else out there. Maybe it's right under our nose. Maybe truly it is spiritual. But I have a difficult time comprehending that a little minute pinhead blew up and has created what we have today in this universe. I have a difficult time understanding, as you do, how something could be created from the vastness of nothing. And it just one would go crazy trying to get the answer.
Exactly. And that's part of the reason I named this book, The Unknown Universe. I think there's a lot of... Now, we have some equations that help us understand. I think this is where physicists have an edge. We can sometimes rely on equations, and they help us through the rough spots where our minds can't comprehend things. We can rely on the equations to get us through. But you have to be careful. You can't put too much stock in that, because really, it's the human brain trying to understand the cosmos we live in, and we have to do more than mathematics. We have to have true comprehension, and that is very, very difficult. And you know, I agree. And sometimes I think that we just are nowhere near the truth. I think if we had a good, solid understanding of physics, we wouldn't be in this problem of being so poorly in such a poor position to understand things. When it boggles the mind and it seems crazy, maybe it's just that we don't have enough physics.
One of the questions I always like to ask true scientists such as yourself is whether you believe that there isn't intelligent life out there in the universe, much like us, maybe more advanced, maybe not, but it's out there. Do you think so?
I think so. I mean, it's hard to believe that that there's not. It's just that you remember Carl Sagan in his show, and he talked about the billions and billions of galaxies. Well,
yep.
He's right. There's a billion stars in our galaxy, and there's billions of galaxies. And the way the Earth is formed is probably a very common way all stars were formed, a swirling cloud of gas, and it collapses. And therefore, most stars probably have planets. And, of course, there could be many, many different planets. There's a lot of planets, maybe like Jupiter and like Pluto, which are inhospitable to most forms of life. But, I mean, with billions and billions and billions of them, there's bound to be planets where some sort of life has to exist. Now, there's probably a boatload of planets that maybe just have basic proteins and amoebas and, you know, that kind of stuff. And but I would imagine that there's also, proteins and these are very basic molecules that exist throughout the universe. And if it could happen here, it could happen there. Now, the problem, though, is as far as communications go, that's a different story. They're probably out there, but they're also probably so far away. I don't see a big chance of us interacting with them.
No, that's true, unless they have learned how to bend space and time.
Now, that's the point. If they learned how to use wormholes, then it's possible, but they'd have to, for some reason, want to, you know, figure out, pick our little planet to visit. But who knows? Maybe they visit millions of places. So, but under the physics as we know it, without the wormholes, it's just there's no hope of any meaningful communication because of the great distances involved.
True, but we're thinking conventionally now.
Thinking conventionally. And, you know, I'll be the first to say there's a lot that we don't understand, and there's a lot we need to understand, and many, many things are possible.
What do you talk about in terms of, in your book, The Big Crunch?
Well, that's what I alluded to before. Before we understood that the universe was expanding faster now than before, we used to think that it would reach some maximum point and then begin to collapse. And when it begins to collapse, then every star, right now, every galaxy is going away from us, except the ones that are close.
And so that's what you mean by the big crunch.
The big crunch is they all come back, and it comes to the final crunch, the big crunch, and poof, everything hits a point and disappears, and there's no more space, there's no more time, and again, a mind-boggling situation where our physics fails. We really can't describe it at that point. It's just too dense.
So how do we know that this accordion type thing doesn't happen over and over again?
Well, that's the cool thing in 10 dimensions or something like that. That's exactly what might be going on. Oscillating systems are very common. The pendulum, you know, these are very common things in nature. Things that swing back and forth, planets that go around stars, stars that go around galaxies, galaxies that go around galaxies. So it's very possible. There's breathing modes, accordion modes. That's kind of easier to understand in a way.
You know, I got to believe too, Richard, that there's got to be more to why we're here. That, you know, we're not here just for 70 or 80 years of some physical existence and then we're gone. It doesn't make any sense, does it?
It sure would be nice to know that there's more to it than that. It would be nice that we have all the knowledge we gain in a lifetime and all the experiences that there would be something more to it. But I'm not sure what happens beyond that.
You're a scientist. You're a physicist. Yeah. Are you a spiritual person, too?
Not in the conventional sense, I guess, I would say. I'm open to new thoughts and almost any idea. But just like in physics and religion, I don't think people have got it right. I think that most of the time people write things down, they get it wrong, they make it up, and it's just not correct.
Sometimes for their own purposes.
Sometimes.
But there's more out there. And it's just so baffling. I don't know. Maybe we'll never get the answers, Richard. Maybe not in this existence.
Yeah, that's. I hope that's not true, George. But it certainly is a possibility.
Where do people pick up the book?
Any store. It's in. You could. The easiest thing to do is go to my website, www.theunknownuniverse.net, and you could order it right online. There's links to Amazon.com. It's in some of the bookstores, or they can get it in a day. It's in the warehouses all over the country right now. So.
This is not your first work.
No.
You're pretty accomplished.
Well, hopefully it's not my last either.
believe me, if it's your last, then something's happened to this planet and we're all gone.
I have an idea for my next book. It's the 10 ways that the Earth can end. It'll just describe the 10 probably most important ways, like the impacts, the supernova, the rogue black hole, the different possibilities that are out there. So I'm working on that, but that's still early stages.
We got to get you and Ed Dames. We call Dr. Doom our remote viewer together. You can both talk about the end of the Earth. Mm. I'm very bullish on this planet. I think, in spite of everything that's happening, that the greed and corruption that's on this planet, the incredible earth changes that are occurring. I mean, I've never seen a few years where it's been this way. I'm still pretty hopeful that mankind's going to pull out of it.
So am I. Even the Bush administration came around, to acknowledge the possible problems of global warming. And they were against it for a long time. And I think a key ingredient to that is education. And not just the formal sit down, read the books education, which is important too, of course, but for frankly, George, the kind of stuff you do, having me on, I'm not big of a deal, but getting people to talk about it, listen, think about it. That's education. And as people begin to realize there's issues and problems, you see it all over. You see people, when I grew up, nobody recycled. Now everybody recycles. And if I don't, my kid's yelling at me. So, people are changing. And sometimes it takes a problem to get people moving in the right direction. And, with these glaciers melting away and ice sheets disappearing, I think people are starting to take notice that something's going on. And I think that's when people really begin to see people at their best. And I think we've been seeing people not at their best for a while, but that can change. I agree with you. I'm bullish on people, even though there's awful as they could be many times.
Oh, yeah.
I think they can be better.
What's going to be the biggest breakthrough in science in the next 5 years, do you think? Make a prediction.
I would say the observation of the Higgs particle. And this is I'm like 50-50 because it may not be found, and might take a little bit longer, but may not even be found at all.
Which some call the God particle.
The God particle, right. Leon Lederman, the Nobel laureate, wrote his book called The God Particle. That just tells you how important this particle is. So I remember maybe it was 10 years ago, maybe longer, when they finally found the top quark. They predicted 6, and finally at the Fermi National Accelerator, and then also at CERN, they found evidence for it. And that was, we all knew it was going to be there. It made headlines and stuff, but it wasn't a big deal. The Higgs particle, that, I think, will be the biggest breakthrough. It's never been observed yet. All our fundamental theories, as we discussed earlier, are based upon it. So that would probably be it.
Is he going to win a scientist the Nobel Prize?
Yeah, I think whoever discovers it, that's going to be a tough one, but there's definitely a Nobel Prize in it to the people in the lab and the accelerator who observe it. No question about it. That's a Nobel Prize.
All right, Richard, you stay with us. We're going to take questions with you next hour. So the phone lines are open. Richard Hammond, Dr. Richard Hammond, our guest. He's the author, of course, of the book we've been talking about all night, The Unknown Universe, and we'll take your questions next on Coast to Coast AM.